think the number one barrier why people don't reach out for mental health support is because they have this desire to just manage things on their own. That fluctuating nature, I feel like, can be a barrier to people reaching out as well.
Welcome or welcome back to The Other Side of the Call, the podcast where we talk about what happens on the other side of service, survival, and staying functional when the job gets heavy. I'm Amelia, former ambulance and police dispatcher, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, registered psychotherapists Rebecca and Kathy Ann. As someone who's been on the other side of the radio, I know how hard it can be to reach out, especially when trust and confidentiality are on the line. Today's episode is a shorter, resource-focused conversation, but it tackles a question we hear all the time. Where do first responders actually go for support when they're not ready, or maybe not willing, to walk into a therapist's office? This interview was originally recorded about 6 months ago, and since then, we've had the opportunity to speak with Dr. Heidi Kram and Lisa Delaney of Garnet Families at Queen's University. If you're looking for it, that was episode 15, called Hidden in Plain Sight, the research behind military and first responder families in Canada. So while some of what you'll hear today may overlap conceptually with that conversation, it reflects how this work is connected across Canada, from research to real-world application. In this episode, we sit down with Dr. Heather Hadjistavropoulos, Executive Director of PSPNet. That's a Canadian program designed specifically for public safety personnel. She walks us through what PSPNet is, how it works, and why it's built differently, offering confidential, self-directed, internet-delivered therapy tailored to the realities of frontline work. So, whether you're a first responder, someone who loves one, or you're listening because something isn't quite right, but you're not sure where to start, this conversation is meant to give you a practical, private option for support. And before we begin, a quick note. The episode includes discussion of trauma exposure, depression, anxiety, moral injury, and suicide prevention. There are no graphic details, but some listeners may still find parts of this conversation difficult. If you need to pause or step away, please do so. If you're in Canada and need immediate support, you can call or text 988 at any time. PSPNet, what does that stand for? How do you explain it to them?
Yeah, it's really what we're about is trying to offer a different way for clients to get mental health care and the support that they need. And we're specifically focused on helping our public safety personnel in Canada.
And how do you do that? Let's talk a little bit about historically and what the future plans are for spreading the word.
We go to conferences. We try and present at different organizations, try and connect with peer supporters because they're often people who are turned to and then are in a position to suggest this particular service. I go on podcasts, a radio, social media type of thing.
Can you talk a little bit about the PSPNet's mandate in plain language? Like, we have a lot of people listening today that won't be psychotherapists or psychologists.
When it comes down to it, we're really about trying to support the mental health and well-being of first responders and other public safety personnel. And that's a broad group. So it includes individuals, well, basically anybody that's out there trying to ensure the safety and security of Canadians. But common groups are border services, correctional workers, firefighters, paramedics, police, public safety communicators, search and rescue, for example. And then what we're doing when I said like we're offering this different form of care. So rather than there's no face-to-face care in the type of service that we offer, what we're doing instead is taking what would normally be shared in face-to-face treatment and put it online in the form of a course. So clients basically sign up, they go through kind of a screening process, make sure like this is the right fit for them. If they are, then they have a username and password and they go on and they work through materials on a weekly basis. We typically start for about 8 weeks that they're progressing through the materials, but we can extend that. Some clients will stay for 16 weeks, say would be the longest. Mm-hmm. And then while they're reviewing this material, which we've spent a lot of time developing and making sure that it's tailored to first responders and other public safety personnel, they also have access to a therapist and they can either set that up through a weekly phone call or they can use our secure email platform where they would send a message and then their therapist would respond. And that type of correspondence usually is just about once a week. That would be the most common, but sometimes they're in touch, you know, twice a week.
And you mentioned earlier that a lot of times people are referred to you through their peer support. Can you talk to us a little bit, or I guess our listeners more, about confidentiality? What happens after they've approached PSPNet? What filters back to peer support or their employer?
Yeah, zero. We won't share any information with a provider unless it's requested, and typically not with a peer supporter. So the peer supporter would be telling them about that, encourage them to visit our website and see what we have to offer. Mm-hmm. We offer different types of courses, but after that, it's completely confidential. We, you know, won't talk to the employer or even other healthcare providers unless they really request it. There's one exception where we would break confidentiality, or some exceptions, which are common in face-to-face care. So if we really became concerned about an imminent risk for suicide or somebody being in danger, then of course we would break it. But
right.
Yeah.
So that's, I think that's a really important comment to add to this conversation, because as you well know, first responders are pretty closed in and they are very concerned with confidentiality. So I appreciate that you guys offer that.
And I would say it is something that people really value about this service, that they don't have to request it through an employer. It's not part of their health record. Definitely something that makes it unique. Mm-hmm. It also, for lots of people, feels like very safe. Sometimes people are not ready to go and talk to somebody in person. And so this can be a way of getting some help without doing it in a way that maybe makes them feel quite vulnerable. Yeah.
So they just do this from the comfort and safety of their own home.
Yeah. And whatever time of day that they want to access it.
Well, that's good for the shift workers too. Yeah. You can still be working and get this done around your hours. So who's involved in designing the therapy programs? Is it clinicians, researchers, representatives themselves? Do you guys include first responders?
Yeah, it's actually a very involved process. So we started off with programs that were originally developed in Australia and have been very well researched. And then we did interviews with hundreds of public safety personnel in order to adapt the materials to their needs. So the materials include education, but there's all these stories and examples of first responders within the material, so that when they come there, they really feel like seen and heard, and they really understand, like, how does that apply to me? How mm-hmm. could that apply within my situation? Mm-hmm. So we used those interviews to adapt the materials. We then have been offering it, and at the end of the program, we ask for further suggestions and feedback about how we can improve things. And so we are continually refining all of the programs that we offer.
Cool. That's good to hear. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the therapeutic models that are used? For example, CBT, DBT, CPT. What kind of tools are you guys putting into the workbook, so to speak?
Yeah, it's based on cognitive behavior therapy. So our primary focus is on that particular model. We've incorporated some other approaches within that model, but that would be the basis. But in addition, each course has these core modules, and then there's many additional resources that clients can draw on if they want to and integrate within. So there is some mindfulness meditation. There's some extra materials that are focused on interpersonal communication and those types of things as well. But the typical approach is to start off with understanding the cognitive behavioral model and really understanding how I think and what I do on a regular basis will impact how I feel. And it's something that is within my control. The modules then go into the idea of identifying and challenging thoughts. We work on over and under arousal, which can be really common. We then spend quite a bit of time on behavior change and graded exposure and really making small changes. And then it really wraps up with goal setting and relapse prevention and the whole idea that mental health is not like a one and done. This is a long-term process, and especially important when you're in a career that puts you at risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like that it's such an accessible tool. I really love that you have developed these tools for people to access. How do you guys measure the success, and how do you track things like symptom improvement, retention, satisfaction, the broader system outcomes?
So this is the great thing actually about an internet delivered service is that we can build in surveys as clients go along. So when people start, we begin with surveys because they give the clinician an understanding of what symptoms they experience. Mm-hmm. And then on a weekly basis, we actually have clients complete an update on their symptoms. So the therapist has that ability to track, you know, what's happening for them and, you know, if improvements aren't happening or maybe areas where they're not happening. And then we do that sort of throughout treatment. And we also at the end of treatment, when they're all wrapped up, we ask them to complete a final set of questionnaires, which the vast majority will do. And then we'll follow up. We've actually done up to a 1-year follow-up. So we send them out and my first responders are actually excellent about filling out these surveys. They don't always like it, but they really...
They're good at following orders.
Yeah. And they, you know, sort of understand the importance of those measures. And they're really good about providing suggestions that I think especially anybody who comes to us really realizes how important it is for this to be helpful. And so if they have some ideas, they're also very good about sharing those.
Well, I really like that they can also utilize this data to see their own progress and to be able to validate their movement through your system from gaining skills and being more empowered and those sort of things, because that's what assessments are used for. So it's great that you guys get the data, but so does the client at the same time for themselves. That's really beautiful.
I think they like this graphing function that we have so they can see symptoms coming down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so what we know from our research and what's really important to us and to me as a researcher is to publish those findings and to put them into a peer review journal. So it's not just me saying this, but it has been published and looked at by external reviewers. What we see is really large effects on symptoms. The most common difficulty that clients come in with would actually be depression, followed by anxiety and then PTSD, but also anger. And those symptoms, we'll see really large improvements on those that make a significant difference. We also do see really improvements in terms of their quality of life and their work and relationship functioning as well. And interestingly, also in terms of sleep. So, you know, that would also be another significant improvement that lots of clients make.
So somebody who might be a skeptic about trying out something that is new to them and not sure how to use it, or maybe they have some stigma, this would be a good way for them to maybe trust in something before they actually try it, to be able to have actual concrete data.
Yeah. We do post our findings on our website as well. So if people are interested, they could see that.
All right. So from stigma to support, there's been many persistent barriers in society and in our own as individuals that prevent responders from seeking help even when these services exist. This sounds like an amazing opportunity for people. How does a stigma appear within public service personnel culture? So self-stigma, peer attitudes, leadership, silence.
It's interesting because on the one hand, like you definitely hear about that when people come, they would just not feel comfortable speaking out about their mental health. But then there will also be some that will say, I'm really comfortable with that. And, you know, I will talk to my colleagues and I'll talk to my leader. So it's really quite diverse. We get both sides of that. Mm-hmm. One thing that really stands out to me is that this is a group, and this is actually a barrier so often, it just in the general population, is that I think the number one barrier why people don't reach out for mental health support is because they have this desire to just manage things on their own. Mm-hmm. It's just this belief like, I can do this on my own. And also the nature of mental health symptoms, it's often that they are quite fluctuating. So, you know, that they'll be really bad at times, but then all of a sudden they'll dip down and they'll be like, it's not too bad. And they think, well, I can handle this. And then, you know, they go back up again and then they come back down. And that sometimes depends on what's going on in their lives. That fluctuating nature, I feel like, can be a barrier to people reaching out as well. And just that belief that I can do this on my own or by talking to people.
Let's talk to those people just for a second. So if I'm in my car listening to this, or I'm out on a walk, hopefully a mindful walk.
What would you say to them?
Yeah, I'd say, oh man, please reach out. This is such an accessible way to get care, and you can feel better. These things make a difference. And oh, you know, that we go through life and you feel bad, and these things, like, it can happen very quickly that you read about your mental health and you start to think about, you know, how am I looking at this world, and making that small shift in your thought can have an immediate impact, like, that very day. Why wouldn't you want to do that? You know?
Yeah. And if you're somebody who is hyper independent, who feels like, oh, this is something I need to be in control of, I need to be in charge of doing this work for myself, I really feel like this is a great opportunity for them, because they are technically in control of this for themselves, because it's programming that they get to lead and do on demand. And, you know, it's not necessarily them putting trust in somebody else, even though they are, but it's kind of disguised. So I really like that feature to this tool. This is great.
Yeah. And here's the other thing, is that we all are going to the internet, and we see all sorts of mental health information there. You're kind of probably noticing this already, especially if you're having difficulties, that it will be drawing your attention, that mental health information. But why not go and get something where you work on things very systematically, that we've put a lot of time into making sure that this is a fit for first responders?
That's the key, guys. This is not like an online DBT community program. It's designed specifically for first responders to get at the issues that you face, that you feel that you need help with.
Yeah, they're tailored to your vocational
experiences. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we definitely have a ton in there about their work experiences, because we've heard lots about those. But we also recognize that we're people, and you have other parts of your life too. So there's still lots of examples there about thoughts that you might have about relationships with your family, or just really about trying to increase pleasant activities outside of work and doing those things that provide meaning. We don't make it just all about work. We see you as a whole person, but there's definitely the work piece in there.
I can only imagine. I'm not a clinical psychologist. I'm the odd man out in the room here in terms of credentials, but are there trends, like, most first responders also have issues in this area of their life or that area of their life?
Comorbidity is really high. So by that, we mean that you don't usually just present with one difficulty. I think it's like 60 to 70% of people will have more than one issue that they present with. And one thing that we found is very significant problems with sleep. And so we just recently launched a sleep course. It's currently available in English, but we've just translated it into French as well. It's actually just 4 lessons, but it provides what we know is extremely effective approach for helping people work on their sleep difficulties. If you want to work on a well-being course, so it's a general course that will address different types of mental health symptoms, like diverse symptoms. Mm-hmm. It's called a transdiagnostic course. You could do that. If you wanted to focus on your PTSD symptoms, you can do that. If you want to focus on sleep, you can do that. And then we are always listening to PSP about, you know, what other types of courses should we be offering. So we're interested in their feedback as well. That well-being course is actually open to spouses and significant others, because we know relationship concerns are actually very frequent in first responders who are in a long-term relationship.
And the family piece there is critical, I think, because there's a whole silent population out there that doesn't really get targeted with these messages and doesn't really have access to the help, but they need it. Mm-hmm. So if you're out there listening and you love a first responder, if you support a first responder, if you advocate for a first responder, check it out.
Yeah. So we have this well-being course. We also have partnered with a group. So it's called PSPNet Families. Mm-hmm. And so actually Dr. Heidi Cram from Queen's University is a co-developer of PSPNet Families, along with Natalie Reed, who's from the Child Trauma Research Center. Mm-hmm. And it's an open website that has all sorts of information that's really designed to help families really think about how they're impacted by coming from a first responder or public safety personnel family. And then also it has strategies for managing some of the challenges that come along.
Before we started today, I looked online and I found that you guys have some provinces that have availability of in-person services, and the rest of Canada, is everything's available online. Can you take us through a little bit of the differences there and why they exist?
Yeah. So we're funded by Public Safety Canada, by the federal government, and that gives us this base funding for PSPNet. And it means that we can offer our self-guided program, so that if you're just taking the course but no therapist support across the country. And then we have agreements with certain provinces where they've provided some kind of resource that helps us have the therapists available to support clients as they go through the course. So we have funding from Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, PEI, Quebec, Ontario, and then also here in Saskatchewan. So we are working to expand this service to other provinces. And it's not a big commitment by the provinces, because we do have this base funding from the federal government. The clients can be on the website 24/7. They can look at the materials at any time they want. They can write to the therapist at any point they want, so they can send the message. They could set up phone calls during those working hours. Also the email exchanges. They get a message, then they will routinely check their messages and they'll respond. So what's really interesting about this approach is very different. Like, it's not what you think of. And lots of people are like, I don't know how I'd like it. But in fact, it really does meet the needs of clients. And what we know from the research is that this type of therapy does the same thing as face-to-face therapy, but just in a different way. So it really provides the support, which is what face-to-face therapy does. So you feel supported and heard and seen. It provides insight. So that's really what therapy is all about, is like gaining some kind of new understanding. Mm-hmm. And then third, it provides that help or support with, how do I go from kind of being stuck to making changes? So these suggestions and help with that process of change, which is, lots of therapies can be really good at give the support and give the insight. But, you know, that piece of most difficult thing is like helping the person actually make the changes that are going to make a difference. And so this type of treatment does the same thing, but just this different pathway of doing it. So more self-directed learning, and then this kind of, we call it therapist support on the side.
Hmm. I think that really speaks to the culture, though, because of who you're serving, because they have erratic hours. They're not always necessarily able to fit into the typical in-person therapeutic timelines. So being able to be self-directed and have this available 24 hours for them to connect to, even if they don't get that response right away, they still have the ability to be feeling supported by somebody who's out there listening and coming to them when they can.
Like,
That's really great.
Exactly. A lot of times, like, clients say, like, just reading the materials and seeing the examples, there's lots of stories in there, of de-identified stories, so we're not sharing personal information. But yeah, just that process of reading about those things, people feel that support. This doesn't replace face-to-face care for lots of clients, but it has a place in our mental health system, and it fills that gap. So for some clients, they use it before they ever seek other mental health services. Mm-hmm. Like, for other clients, they've had mental health services, but they've run out of benefits, or they didn't have enough money to continue. So they use it as follow-up care. Mm-hmm. For some, they're on medication and they're using it sort of a supplement to medication. Still for others, maybe they've been in therapy and they've actually been really successful and it was really helpful. But then life happens and, you know, there's a bit of a relapse. And so they'll use it as this way of like getting back on track. It has this spot in there that complements other forms of care.
I think you've done a great job of describing of all the wonderful reasons and ways that people could use this service.
You can learn more about PSPNet and access their programs directly at pspnet.ca. That's pspnet.ca. We'll include links in our show notes to everything discussed in today's episode. If you've been listening and thinking, maybe this is something I should look into, but you don't have it all figured out yet, you can take the first step and get informed privately and on your own terms. And if this conversation brought anything up for you and you're feeling a bit heavy after listening, we want to take a moment to reset together. If you're in a place where you can safely pause and follow along, we invite you now to join Kathy Ann, our in-house psychotherapist, as she leads you through a brief grounding exercise. And remember, if it keeps you here, let's talk about it.
So let's just take a quick moment to reset. So let's take a deep breath in and exhale. Okay, take a look around and name five things that you can see. What are four things that you can touch? What are three things that you hear in your environment right now? What are two things that you can smell? And what do you taste? You're safe. You're here, you're present, and you matter.